73. Psalm 73. Truly, God is good to Israel, to such as are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. For I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For there are no pangs in their death, but their strength is firm. They are not in trouble as other men, nor are they plagued like other men. Therefore, pride serves as their necklace. Violence covers them like a garment. Their eyes bulge with abundance. They have more than heart could wish. They scoff and speak wickedly concerning oppression. They speak proudly. They set their mouth against the heavens, and their tongue walks through the earth. Therefore, his people return here, and waters of a full cup are drained by them, and they say, how does God know? And is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are the ungodly, who are always at ease. They increase in riches. Surely I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocence. For all day long I have been plagued and chastened every morning. If I had said, I will speak thus, behold, I would have been untrue to the generation of your children. When I thought how to understand this, it was too painful for me, until I went into the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their end. Surely you set them in slippery places. You cast them down to destruction. Oh, how they are brought to desolation as in a moment. They are utterly consumed with terrors. As a dream when one awakes, so, Lord, when you awake, you shall despise their image. Thus my heart was grieved, and I was vexed in my mind. I was so foolish and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You hold me by my right hand. You will guide me with your counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is none upon earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For indeed those who are far from you shall perish. You have destroyed all those who desert you for harlotry. But it is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord God, that I may declare all your works.
A few years ago, a professor in a philosophy class told the class as they were preparing for final tests that he was going to write the final test on the board. He went to the board and wrote one word, why? That was the final test. All of the students in that class, save one, wrote page after page after page in trying to answer that question. They all failed the test. The one person who passed the test wrote one word, because. Sometimes I feel like those students must have felt when that one word was written on the board, why? And sometimes I think I feel like those students must have felt who had tried to answer it with page after page and had failed, because sometimes, folks, when we ask the why in life, there just isn't any logical answer from our standpoint, except to say because and place it in the hands of God. When I read the Jackson Sun and see the dollhouse make the headlines on the front page, and articles in it that talk about the two little boys whose father sued the Boy Scouts because they had the pledge to support God and country, and think about all the good things that are happening that never make the front page and usually don't even make a page in the newspaper, I'm prone to ask the question, why? When I read the sports page, as I always do, usually before reading the front page, and I read about those ball players that signed for $10 and $20 million, and then a few days later read where Lynn Dykstra has had a wreck because he was drinking alcohol at a party, When I listen to some of the things that those players say and do, drawing salaries of millions of dollars, and then stop and think that most of the gospel preachers, especially 10 or 15 years ago, were not supported enough to really live as they needed to, and most of our teachers in our educational system who are involved in helping our young people form the attitudes and skills that are needed for life, are not supported to where they can really make ends meet, and constantly something's being said about their needs, I ask the word or the question, why? And frankly, I don't find the answer in my own thinking. When I see people who use the Lord's name in vain and spend all of their time involved in evil, seemingly have perfect health, and I witness some of the most spiritually minded people that have ever lived suffer day in and day out. When I think about September the 9th, 1960, when Judy's father was killed instantly in an automobile accident, at 50 years of age, an excellent gospel preacher, and the man who came across the line in the driver and driving the gravel truck under the influence of alcohol was not even injured, I ask the question, why? And now, 31 years later, I still don't have the answer that I can give from my standpoint. When I think about incidents that have happened even in our own midst in the last few weeks where we've lost those that were so spiritually minded and seemingly so capable of working in the Lord's kingdom, and we see others that are sick, and we look about us and see those who seemingly care nothing about God and would even blaspheme his name, not suffering, the question why rises in our thinking again and again. But I believe the best answer to that question that I've found is in turning to God's Word, and particularly in the chapter that Brad just read. I want to just think with you for a few minutes this morning about this 73rd Psalm. And I want to request of all of us that we read it at least two or three times in the week to come. We all listened as Brad read it a moment ago. This is not a psalm of David. It's a psalm of Asaph. And you'll notice in this psalm that he says over in verse 16, when I thought to know this, it was too painful for me. I think he was facing some of the same situations that I've just described. He was looking at life in general. We'll see in a moment in the first part of the psalm that he was describing something going on about like we've just described, and then we'll find the answer that he found in the last part of the psalm. But notice here in verse 16, he says, I wanted to know this. I wanted to understand it. I wanted the answer. And it was just too painful for me. Because of that, he tended to have self-pity, as indicated in verses 13 and 14. Verily, I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocency. For all the day long have I been plagued and chastened every morning. He was saying, look, I've put God first. I've done all the things that I should do. And what's it going to do for me? What good is it? He was bathing himself in self-pity. And then, as indicated in the second verse, he felt like he was trying to climb up a slippery, wet creek bank, with that idea of making one step forward and sliding two steps back. The idea that I think, young people, is in that song, Slip Sliding Away. I'm not for sure I understand that song, but I think that's what it's saying. Slip sliding away. Many of us have had the experience of wading in the creek and start up a bank where the water had caused it to be slick, and we get about halfway up and slide all the way back, take one step forward and slide back two or three. And that's exactly what he's saying. He says, as for me, my feet were almost gone. My steps had well nigh slipped. And if we're not careful, as we look at the realities of life, we'll allow ourselves to be like that. We'll allow ourselves to have self-pity, to fail to put life in proper focus, to feel sorry for ourselves and say, why me, Lord? Why do these things happen? And I think we need to stop and consider this and to try to put it in proper focus. This chapter is divided by verse 17. The first 16 verses give a shaken faith or describe a shaken faith. And the verses in the latter part of the chapter from verse 19 through 28 talk about a strong faith. Let's just notice what he says. He is concerned about the apparent success of the wicked and the lack of success from man's standpoint of the righteous. He says in verse 3 that I was envious of the foolish or the wicked when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. I doubt that there's a one of us in the audience this morning who's old enough to think about this, but who has driven down the road and looked over at the mansions that belong to those who don't even take time to worship God on the Lord's Day. Maybe we'll ask ourselves the question and wonder about how in the world can a person have all these things? How can they enjoy all those things? And maybe sometimes we say to ourselves, we think maybe we don't have what we need, or at least what we want in life. Why is it that the wicked seem to prosper, Asaph says. And then in verse 4, he says, there are no bands in their death, or in the New King James Version that was read, there are no pains in their death. Their strength is firm. Doesn't it appear to you sometimes that some of the best people in the world suffer the most? It was true at the time of Paul. Look at all of the sufferings that he had and the persecutions that he faced and the difficulties that he bore. We look around us and so many of the people who don't even care about God and who do the very opposite to what God has instructed us to do seemingly have the least suffering. And then you see somebody whose life is just patterned after the life of Christ as far as quality is concerned, and they never have a moment's peace from pain. And it causes you to ask that question, why, and to wonder. He says in verse 5, these are the wicked or the foolish, they're not in trouble as other men, they're not plagued as other men, they're not chastened, in other words, as other men are. Perhaps we need to be reminded that the writer of the Hebrew letter said that God chastens those whom he loves. That may be part of the answer, although I'm not for sure that we understand that completely. But you look around you and you see this person, you know that he's dishonest in his business dealings, and yet his business seems to flourish. You know that he doesn't live by the principles of righteousness, and yet he seems to go up, up, up in the community. How is it, Asaph says, that these folks have no trouble as other men, and they're not plagued as other men? And even they boast about it, and their pride compasseth them about as a chain. And their eyes stand out with fatness. They are boastful about it, sometimes even bragging about, look what I'm accomplishing, and I don't need God. Sometimes there are people that would, in a sense, poke a finger of fun at us for living the Christian life and say, look at the difference. Look what I'm accomplishing in life. Look what I have. Look at all the things I enjoy. Here you are. You're saying you follow God, and you don't have some of these things. Asaph says that he wonders about the wicked and how they can boast about all these things. In fact, verse 8 indicates that they even make fun of God. He says they speak loftily. And folks, we're living at a time in our nation when many people are making fun of God. Some even concern that the word God is on some of our money. The incident that I mentioned earlier even concerned that our Boy Scouts would pledge their support to God in our country. And at a time when there is an appeal for anything to be taught and practiced in our schools, an attempt to take the word God out of our schools, to where it's not even mentioned in any way whatsoever, certainly we can share with Asaph in this. They set their mouth against the heavens, their tongue walketh through the earth. Therefore his people return hither, and waters of full cup are wrung out. The next verse says they're even skeptical in this about God. They say, how doth God know, and is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are the ungodly who prosper in the world. They increase in riches. The first song that we sang today was basically saying that. Tempted and tried, we're oft made to wonder how it could be thus all the day long. Other statements in that song, we look about us and we see the unrighteous, how they prosper. And we're sometimes in want and in need, and that big three-letter question pops up again. Why? Why does this happen? And if we're not careful and if we don't keep things in proper focus, we can have the self-pity and we can act and think as if we're standing on those slippery places. I think there are four basic reasons that this man had this attitude in the first part of the psalm. Number one, envy is indicated in verse 3. Envy is rottenness of the soul. And if we allow ourselves to think in terms of envy and think in terms of this world's goods, we're going to have some of these problems. Number two is the time element. Asaph was thinking about what's happening right now. He was looking at the moment instead of looking at the overall plan and the overall full impact of what happens in life itself. In the third place, it seems that he was looking at it from the wrong vantage point, the wrong standard. He was down here in the valley of earth looking at it from man's standpoint. And even the beautiful mountains of the land do not look the same when we're down in the valley as they do when we're up on the top of them. Or when we're able to get up in the plain and look down at the entirety of the earth and to see it all as a whole, we see a different scene. He was looking at life from the wrong vantage point. And then he was, as we shall see in more detail in just a moment, failing to stop and look at his true blessings and to count them. But he found the answer in verse 17. Notice all of these things had been present, his self-pity, his self-concern, his wondering about how all the things could happen with the wicked and the unrighteous. But look at verse 17. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I their end. You see, when he was looking at it just from the standpoint of man, he didn't understand it. But now he says, I went into the sanctuary of God, and the sanctuary of God here is used in the sense to represent the presence of God, where God sits and how he looks at things. And yes, we understand it's impossible for us to really put ourselves in the same place where God is. There's no way we can understand as he does. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts and his ways higher than our ways. But somewhat in a limited sense, we as Christian people can look at it from the place where God sits. And when we look at it from the place where God sits, it takes on a different view, as it did in the case of Asaph. Notice, here's the same one who had said back in verse 2, I thought I was standing on slippery places. Now, as he looks at it from God's standpoint, he says, surely thou didst set them, that's the wicked, surely thou didst set them in slippery places. He says, I'm not the one that's standing on a slippery creek bank, it's the wicked. I was just looking at it from the wrong standpoint. Thou castest them down into destruction. And don't overlook this verse. How are they brought into desolation as in a moment? They are utterly consumed with their terrors. I never read that verse that I don't think of President Richard Nixon. Whatever you may be politically, whatever you may think about him positively or negatively, he is a classic example of how someone could be at a high position at one moment and the very depths at the next moment. I think we probably have not had a man in our history that fell farther in a moment than did he. Wickedness evidently was involved in some of the decisions that he made. They're brought to desolation in a moment. They're utterly consumed. Asaph says, really, when you stop and think about it, it's the wicked that are in slippery places. And then he begins to count his own blessings and look at it from God's standpoint. Look at verse 21 and on down. Thus my heart was grieved, and I was pricked in my reins. So foolish was I and ignorant. I was as a beast before thee. Now he changes his thoughts. Nevertheless, I was continually with thee. Even in the difficult times, he says, I had God as my helper. Thou hast holden me by my right hand. Thou shalt guide me with thy counsel, and afterward receive me to glory. You see how he begins to look at it from God's standpoint? Not just how the wicked may draw the $1 million salary today and have all the blessings, but he says, I began to look at it and to realize that it's that end result out yonder where I'm going to be received into glory that counts. And then he says, whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon earth that I desire beside thee. He says, when I stop and think about it, I realize that I have God as a companion and Christ as a companion. And those wicked folks out there don't have that. Oh, they may have something that seems to be so important, but they don't have what I've got. They don't have what I have in the relationship to God. My flesh and my heart faileth, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Lo, they that are far from thee shall perish. Thou hast destroyed all them that go a-whoring from thee. But it is good for me to draw nigh to God, you see. This closeness to God that he's talking about. I have put my trust in the Lord God that I may declare all thy works. What a change in the latter part of that song. And it all took place because Asaph said, I went into the sanctuary of God and I began to look at it from his standpoint. I can't stand here this morning and tell you that I have the answer to that why that keeps popping up in our lives. I don't have it any more for myself than for you or than you have. There are a lot of things about life that I don't understand. There are many things about the suffering of righteous people and when death comes and when there are difficulties financially and other things like this for which we have no answer until we go into the sanctuary of God and we look at it from his standpoint. And when we do that, though we may not be able to understand all the details and why things happen as they do, we'll be able to put all of this in proper focus and come together on that thought of Romans 8 that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. It all depends on the vantage point from which we are viewing life as to whether or not we can put life in proper focus. Asaph said, why? Why do the wicked and the unrighteous have all these things and the righteous don't? And he said, as I thought on that, I was depressed and disappointed on slippery places. But then he said, I went into the sanctuary of God. And I looked at it from his standpoint. And I realized that all these things that have seemed so much don't really count. That they all really add up to a big zero. And the things that count, the things that last, the things that matter, are the things that come from viewing life from the standpoint of God. And the end result of our being able to live with him in heaven and even have his blessings and companionship while we live here. That's the way to put life in focus. I don't know whether any of us have arrived where we need to on this point or not. I rather doubt that we have. But I believe we must continue to work. We must continue to try to understand it from the standpoint of God. Without God, there is no answer. With God, the answer is clear. And that's why you and I need to be Christians and to be right with God. I don't know how to even begin to explain life without God. There is an incomplete understanding even with him. But how much we need him and how much we need him in our lives. How much some of you this morning need to confess his name and be buried with him in baptism to have that relationship to where you can look at things from the standpoint of where God sits. And how much some may need to come even in public penitence and asking for prayer to make their lives right, to quit worrying about the wicked and to be concerned about the relationship with God. If you're not where you, with Asaph, can go into the sanctuary of God, the presence of God, and look at life from that standpoint, and with his help put everything in proper focus, you need to come to him as together we stand and sing.